Omar Rabba Bail Beer in Choshev Shemichud. We saw there were a number of debates about this. We saw Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. It appears to be a Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos whether Bail Beer is a heter or merely a diminished Isser and therefore no Onesh. The Dvar Halacha Kod Samachronim who understand that Rashi means Bail Beir, so it's Asim Midrabanan. It's Mutzim Minatar, it's Asim Midrabanan, that's why there's no Malkus. Perhaps. Certainly the Pashas, as Tosis points out, Pashas is like Tosis. Although the Pashas of the Gemara in Kiddushin is like Tosis. Although the Pesachei Tshuva had been noted. Pesachei Tshuva quotes from the Chidah, right from the Gemara in Sukkah to Rashi. It should be noted also that the Taz, in the little letters on the bottom, some Chalakim Shulchan Aruch, the Taz is in the Rashi position, which here is taken by Chalakas Machokek, and the Taz moves down to the bottom. The two raise up. The Taz actually thinks there is no Machokek. Taz has lengthy explanation of what Rashi actually means. He doesn't think Rashi means it's Asher Zom Malkus. There's a whole explanation. Be that as it may, again we saw that the Beis Shmuel indicates that Shulchan Aruch is aligned with Tosas. Bail Beir is Mutter. So that was issue number one. Issue number two, if issue number one was whether Bail Beir is Mutter or not, issue number two is why does Bail Beir work? And that we saw, it appears to be a machlokas harishonim. Rashi says, "Mistafi mibal hashta asi." She's concerned that the husband may show up right now. While the Rambam has more general language, quoted by the Shulchan Aruch, that emas baala aleha, more of a generalized an inhibition because her husband is nearby, an inhibition because of her husband's proximity. The Achronim clearly debate that issue. We discussed several Nafkaminas yesterday. To recap and to add a little bit, the Pesachei Tshuva had quoted from the Chachmas Adam that the whole Heter Bail Beir is only if she's at home, because otherwise the husband's not going to pop in. The Dvar Halacha points out that the Chida and the Chazanish and other Achronim say, no, anywhere in town. Doesn't matter where in town she is. And the second issue, which we should develop a little more, is the program of Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in which he contends that you could be in the same town and still not be considered Ba'ir. She's in the Lower East Side and he's in the Garment District. They're both in Manhattan, both in New York City. It doesn't matter. He's muflug if he's far away or he's locked up at work, whatever it is. He's tied up at work. I mean, literally tied up at work. I mean, he's busy, can't get... He's a litigator, and he's walking into he's about to walk into court. He's not leaving for hours. So Rav Moshe Feinstein assumes that that's not called Bail Beir. The Chaznish and the Chidah and others said, no, Beir is Beir. You could think about that second nafkamina more generally as how do you define Beir? What do you mean by a city? According to Rav Moshe Feinstein, you probably would, it doesn't really mean city, Bein lahachmir, as he said, and probably also bein lahakel. In other words, Rav Moshe said, just because you're both in New York City, you're both in Manhattan, legally it's one city. From a halachic perspective, it's one city in terms of tchumen. Okay, but it's not really a kufur of Moshe, which is, again, aligned with Rashi. It's not really about the city. It's about, could he actually show up? So lahakel also, let's say, instead of an enormous city like New York, where technically you're in the same city, but you're too far away to actually show up. How about Hafuch? You're up in the Golan, and there's Highway 98, I think it is. Swings around the eastern side of the Kinneret. I think it's 98. And then off every mile or so, there's another exit, and there's a road off the highway to the left or to the right, and you go right down the road half a mile, and there's a Yishuv. So you pass by the exit to Nov, they pass by the exit to Chispin, over there is Ramat HaMagshimim, and so on and so forth. So a whole series of Yishuvim, they're all separate towns. They're legally, politically separate towns. Alpi Halacha, separate Chum Shabbos. But it's a 3-minute drive. You can get from Nov to Chespin like that. If you have a car, it's 1, 2, 3. So halachically, in terms of from a Chum Shabbos perspective, they're not the same year. But according to Rav Moshe, according to Rashi, it may not matter. You don't really need Baila Be'ir. Bein Lahaka, Bein Lahachmer. It's not about the ear. It's could you show up soon? So if he's one yeshuv over, he's in the next village, he could be here in 3 minutes. It's like that. So according to Rashi, according to Moshe Feinstein, a rare kula based on Rashi, the luchora, if you're not in the same yeshuv, but it's a very quick drive, that could be true in New Jersey also. It could be true in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Florida also. Where you have from Passaic to Paramus.
New Square in New Hempstead.
There you go, right. Well, when you have municipalities that mamish run one into the next, like Teaneck and Bergen from the Tenafly, or like Chveis maybe from Airmont, from New Hempstead into Spring Valley into Muncie, there's a whole discussion, you know, at the atrium, there's different approaches among different Masadre Kedushin. If you get married to HM, do you write Spring Valley or do you write Muncie? Because by the street signs, it's Spring Valley. But there are other ways of looking at it. It's just Muncie. So different. It's not going to pass like Subi the way, which is the ideal way to write it. But if you have one municipality flows right into the next, but technically there's a sign that says you're now entering a new, and now there are new parking rules. But that's Alpidin, from a Tchum perspective, certainly, that's one ear. But let's say there's some space. I think there is space from Passaic to Paramus. But it's a 5-10 minute drive. So one issue is, where is she? Another issue is, where is he? Which another way of thinking about that second question is how you magdir ear, and then the third question was how you magdir libo gaspa. You remember the Chacham Zadim had realized that if you can say it like Rashi, it's about the husband actually showing up. The whole idea of libo gaspa becomes very difficult to understand, and the Chacham Zadim reworks it into it's really a question of does it look suspicious if he walks in there alone? Anytime, one example why it's not suspicious is because you know they're cousins, but it could be also because he's the electrician. So that's a massive chumrah that vastly expands the scope of libo gaspa, which means you're shrinking the scope of baila be'ir. Halacha l'maisa, we assume like Alpipashas, like the Rambam Chida Kazanish, that the common the preponderance of the view in poskim, which means aligned to the language of the Rambam, it's the emas baila lel, like the Kazanish says, it's a nerve. It's a feeling. It's not a practical consideration. So that means, number one, if she's anywhere in town, even if she's not home, even the husband doesn't know exactly where she is, she's anywhere in town, there's baila be'ir. Number two, the definition of ear does not have to do with the husband's capacity to actually show up. It does have to do with the halachic definition of ear. Because that you feel like you're in the same town. It's a question of how she feels, how she's thinking. And finally, libo gaspa has to do with literally libo gaspa. If you're more comfortable with one another, you're more familiar with one another. I've known her since we were 5 years old, or my cousin, my sister, and so on and so forth. So you're again. There was, as you pointed out, there's the negative, the horribly negative, inappropriate type. Version of gaspa is kine la baila, which again is a discussion amongst Rishonim. Maybe Mechokes to Gaonim already. Shulchan Aruch had quoted that from the Trumas Hadeshin that kine la baila is the equivalent of libo gaspa. But classic libo gaspa is appropriate, just more you're more comfortable, and that the disinhibition that comes from libo gaspa is going to counteract the added inhibition that baila beer adds, and in Mela you're back to square one in yichud. Is also, it should be noted I noticed this in the Dvar Halacha. Take a look at Dvar Halacha last night. And this is a psak that a friend of mine had gotten from Rav Shechter many years ago. When you think taught Libo Gaspa, part of the definition of Libo Gaspa is that you're roughly peers. The scenario was, the scenario that the shayla I heard about was the following. A couple who at the time were living in the Heights, have since moved out, at the time living in the Heights, and he was learning the Kollel here, and they lived on the other side of Washington Heights. And his father was their babysitter. His father had retired, and he wanted to spend time with his grandchildren. And his son was in yeshiva, his daughter-in-law was working, so he said, I'll be glad to babysit for the grandchildren. So the question was, so he's home with the grandchildren, that's great, that's not your child there. His daughter-in-law comes home, does he have to skedaddle out of the apartment within a few minutes? Father-in-law and daughter-in-law are in the apartment. His son, her husband, is 5-10 minutes away. The kids were babies. We'll get later on into a couple of sifnim into ages for Yechid. The kids were mamish babies. Maybe they were toddlers. Too young to be relevant as shomer for Yechid. So the question is, father-in-law and daughter-in-law are in an apartment, and her husband, his son, is 10 minutes away. Mamish ba'ir. The question is, but it's libo gaspa. They have a wonderful relationship, a very positive relationship. So Rav Shechter thought that part of the definition of libo gaspa is that you're roughly peers. Father-in-law, daughter-in-law, that's not, that's so by definition, not libo gaspa. Again, there could be scenario. Sometimes being alone in an apartment, as Torah yesterday, may be a problem of a davar mechur or low tova shvua, but in this case it was not an appropriate situation. The question is, technically, is the yichud problem? The answer is no. It's not yichud because it's ba'al b'ir. I libo gaspa. No, that's not libo gaspa because even though they have a positive relationship, if they're not peers, it's not going to be libo gaspa. Question, Yaakov.
Shouldn't the husband's ability to show up, doesn't that contribute to the general state of mind of
peer? One could have read the Rambam as saying the same as Rashi. One could have read the Rambam as saying Amos Baila means is a practical concern that he may walk in. But the Chida and the Chazanish and many others assume, no, what the Rambam means is more generally just him being proximity matters. Just like you naturally stand, act, talk, conduct yourself differently depending on who's in the room. You're aware of the presence of other people. So spouses will be in a different frame of mind. If they're a woman, be in a different frame of mind if her husband is nearby.
Ready?
Yeah.
Is there a difference between married and dating?
I think the reason why you would say that, again, the most obvious reason why you would say that is because of the libo gaspa. Again, as Chachuzan pointed out, if you understand Baal Bir as being literally the husband may walk in, libo gaspa becomes very challenging to understand. So Pashas libo gaspa indicates that Baal Bir is really about your headspace. It's not about a practical. Again, if there's a practical consideration, that may be the next thing that we're about to jump into, and that's Pesach Pasuach. We'll come to that in a moment, but first a question or two.
What about if they were dating or engaged, but not officially married? Is that different?
If they're dating or engaged but not officially married, that does not create any heteri. As a matter of fact, dating or engaged, as we'll see soon, today or Sunday, may make yichud more challenging. But certainly, right, we don't say that her fiancé is ba'ir. Her fiancé is ba'ir. There's a discussion posted that the halacha quotes arusa, but literally, here's a tricky. In modern Hebrew, the term arusin is used to mean engagement. But that's halachically very confusing. But literally, if there was kiddushin without nisuin, so that's a discussion whether if there had kiddushin, do you say baal habir or the baal habir adopted nisuin? But before any ring is given, make that clear. Before the tabas kiddushin is given, giving the engagement ring, giving her a rock, as it says, giving her a diamond ring to get engaged,
That's beautiful. That's very sentimental, and I'm all for sentiments, very pro-sentiment. But that is not going to create a heter of a yidu. Yeah.
Let's say they're like the Eno Gaspa, like they're enemies. Are there any yidu concerns?
We're going to get to that. And that's actually coming up in Yud. The situations where there's enmity, does the enmity ever play a role? And sometimes it does play a role. Even the possibility of enmity could play a role. Animus. Can animus ever affect yichud? I have a good friend of mine, Daniel Feldman, who pointed out the word animus, A-N-I-M-U-S, is enmity. But if you just see it written,
it
sounds like animus. It sounds somehow so positive. But it's not animus. It's animus. So we'll see about the role of animus. But let's come back to the din of Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef tells us, in between the memra of Rabbah and the story of Libo Gaspa, the Gemara had that memra, Amar Rav Yosef, in the middle of Pei Alf, Amar Alf, Amar Rav Yosef, Pesach, Pasuach, L'Rushus HaRabim, Ein Choshim Shumichad. Open door policy. If an open door to Rosh Arabim, then there's no concern of Yichud. Take a look at the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch seems pretty straightforward. Sif Tes, the top of page Nun Ches. Sif Tes, right after this. We just saw Sif Ches by over here. Sif Tes, Pesach right over here. If you're looking for this place. Bayis Shapischa Pasuch Rosh Arabim. Ein chashash v'sached sham in er. You have a house, a bayis, a room with a door that's open to Rosh Rabim. There's no concern of yichud there, even if it's yichud with an erva, which is otherwise would be yichud deraisa. But Pesach Pasuach, that is fine. That is fine. Okay, I'll tell you a story just to get the Shulchan Aruch seems very straightforward. The Bar Hetev and the Pischei Tshuva are going to add this is one of the most common factors in Hilchos Yichud. It's critical to know the details and the extent of Pesach Pasuach because it is one of the most potent ways to resolve a yichud situation, to solve a yichud situation. And the Bar Hetev and the Pischei Tshuva are going to add several important dimensions you have to think about in terms of assessing whether or not you have Pesach Pasuach. But we'll get started with the story of Chaim Oizer, the Achiezer, Chaim Oizer Gozhensky, who was, you probably have heard his name, he was one of the Gedolei Torah of Lithuania in the early 20th century. He was a Rav in Vilna, and he was in many ways one of the leading Rabbanim and Poskim for much of Eastern European Jewry, particularly between World War I and World War II. The Tshuvas Achiezer, I think he's the first one, for instance, he's the first one to discuss the kashrus of gelatin in the Achiezer. He was handling a lot of halachic issues. He was also, as Rav of Vilna, as World War II was approaching, he was very, very busy with seeking to save many, many lives. Those of you who have read some Holocaust history, and pre-Holocaust history, particularly if you've read about the story of the Mir Yeshiva, there was this, the Malta, I think it was the Malta-Ribbentrop Accord. It was a temporary treaty between Russia and Germany, and one of the things that drove was that Vilna became, at least temporarily, this international city, where you're able to sort of walk on one side and walk on the other side. And that's how that was part of how the Mir Yeshiva managed to escape across through Vilna to Siberia on the train all the way to China, Japan, and from there to safety. And there were massive amounts, there were massive amounts of Jews coming in and out of Vilna, and he was trying to help people get to where they need to get to for safety, and there's massive numbers of Jews that needed food. I needed a place to sleep. And so he was intensely busy. They say, again, it's hard to know whether these stories are literally true, but they definitely don't say stories like this about you and I, that he supposedly was a true multitasker. When people multitask, what it really means is your mind is, you're switching back and forth between, you're holding different things, you're not, but you keep
your brain keeps switching back and forth between thinking about this and thinking about that. But he supposedly was a true multitasker. He was able to write, they say, he was like, he'd be writing tshuvas about two different topics with two hands simultaneously. The way they describe it, again, it's hard to imagine, this isn't somewhat mugzam, somewhat exaggerated. They describe, like, walking to Chaim Moshe's office, and he's, you know, writing with both hands and on the phone, and there's like a group of butchers talking about a shayla, a woman is talking about, like, everything's like, and he was like literally multitasking. Hard to know whether, again, I imagine it's somewhat exaggerated, but he was exceptionally busy and exceptionally productive, and he was definitely super genius. You don't have to be a super genius to be a Talmud Chacham. Some Talmud Chacham aren't, and some are. He seems like he was one of those who was. And he was getting a lot done. There was a lot that needed to get done. Which makes several stories of Chaim Ezer all the more impressive. And he was able to shut out everyone and everything else. And even though there was so much else that had to be done, focus on just one person. One of those stories is the following. So they tell a girl comes to Reb Chaim Ezer, and so how can I help you? So she tells him that she's getting married in a couple of days. So it's happy, it's wonderful. So how can I be helping? So she says that she lost her mother, and at the time, nowadays typically you get engaged, you're going to learn Hilchos Nida with Rabbeim, with Rabbanim, there'll be chassan classes. Sometimes people, if a Rebbe, you learn Hilchos Nida with individually. It was never relevant before. It's about to be relevant. Once you get married, you got to keep Hilchos Nida. So nowadays, it's usually more of a public system. Once upon a time, the shtetl is usually something that you learn from a parent. Specifically, a girl would learn Hilchos Nida from her mother before she got married. So she says, I have no mother. It seems like that had been a very recent, fresh tragedy. She's getting married in a couple of days. She doesn't know. She has to start keeping Hilchos Nida. She doesn't know. What's she supposed to do? So Chaim Ezer, the way they tell the story, she comes into his office. Chaim Ezer walks over to the window. He says, make yourself comfortable, have a seat. He scans at the window like this and proceeded for the next, I don't know, half hour, hour, two, 3 hours to stand there and teach her all Hilchos Nida. So I'll tell you what you need to know. Meaning, this girl is so uncomfortable. What's he going to do with her? What did he send to this one, to that one? She has a tzarech, she needs my attention. But how is he going to sit with her for 2-3 hours? That's a terrible little problem. So he could go take a walk in the park with her, but that's going to be incredibly uncomfortable for her. So he said, I'll stand by the window. Everyone who's passing by can see me. You could sit and be comfortable. I'm visible to the street. That's chalon ha-pasuach l'rishos harab. Same as Pesach Pasuach l'rishos harab. I'll stand at the window. He stood there, and again, he had a lot on his plate. And for the next, to whatever it was, probably 2-3 hours, he sat there and he taught her step by step, din by din, and reviewed, and you understand this, and okay, let's go back to that. And calmly gave her, and he made himself uncomfortable to stand by the window for 3 hours, so she could be comfortable, she could have her privacy, and to maintain fidelity to simultaneously high standards of Binam L'Chadero and Binam L'Makam. So that's Chalona Pasuch Shirabim, like Pesach Pasuch Shirabim. But there are a few questions we have to ask, and I'll be glad to take your questions afterwards, but let's first learn some of the Dinim, and then we can have a more effective conversation. So one question is, what's the Rosh Hashanah? What's the Rosh Hashanah? Pesach Pasuch Rosh Hashanah, one question is, what's the Rosh Hashanah? Take a look at the Pesach Tshuva. Take a look at the Bar Hetiv. The Bar Hetiv right over here. Oz Tes. Skip a line. At the end of the line says, Had the Pisco Pasuch Lushus Harabe in Choshishin. When we say that Pesach Pasuch Harabe is no concern of Yichud, Dafke Bayom Abba Balai Lalo. It's time dependent. The Bar Hetiv goes. It's only... By this only works a day, it does not work a night. Then he explains why. It's like a Kriya Shema. Like a Tkiya Shefer is only by Yom. Mila is only by Yom. Lulav is only by what? This is one of the dinim in the mission in the Gilad of Chav. Is mitzvah by Yom? No, it's not a din and day. So he explains, Uvalayla Nami,
even at night. Davka b'shtei shos al gimel shos yosef. Yeah, if it's already 2-3 hours into the night, then Pesach Pesuach doesn't apply.
Why?
She b'nei adam assumed the matayim. At that time, that's not very hard. This is before Thomas Edison revolutionized the world, before there were electric light bulbs and an electric grid. So when the sun went down, it got dark. And you could have a candle, you could have gas lamps, but lamaxa, for most people, that was expensive. And if you're going to turn on any illumination at all, it would be briefly. And most people couldn't afford to light their homes all night long every night. So most people went to sleep. Now, how about that? At 10 o'clock, most people were certainly at home. There were no street lamps. Now, how many people are out and about 3 hours after dark? Very few people. It says the Pesach Shuvah, it says the Barhetiv rather, I'm sorry. It says the Barhetiv. Relying on me again, the last line of the first comment of the Barhetiv. So people show us 2-3 hours into the night. So by at that point, people are already at home. They ain't over for sure. There's no one going back and forth. There's no traffic on the street. I mean, here and there, there are people every once in a while, but there's no steady flow of traffic. So at that point, that's, you can't pass the Pesach. Abba, the Chatzi Shoah Shalayla, the first half hour of dark, that may sound familiar from Hilchos Hanukkah. Shebnei Adam over Meshavim, the Eidlein hand uses that language. The Eidlein Kolsa Regal Meshuk. That's the Hanukkah early in the evening, when there's still traffic on the regular traffic on the street, Kiyom Chashibel, it has the status of day, the Ein Chosh Shalihir. At that point, it's still Pesach. So, where is he getting from? Kaf Nun Hegel, the Knesset HaGadol, one of the early opponents of the 1600s. So the Barhetiv tells us, the first thing you show up Pesach Pesuach
is it doesn't apply at 11 o'clock at night. What is he really saying? What he's really doing is defining, when I say Roshos HaRabim, Pesach Pesuach Roshos HaRabim. I have to figure out what Pesuach means. The first that fair was Roshos HaRabim. What do you mean Roshos HaRabim? Roshos HaRabim means just the street. Roshos HaRabim means for Hilcha Shabbos. What does Roshos HaRabim mean? He says, no, Roshos HaRabim means, what does Roshos HaRabim mean? A place where there are people going by on a regular basis. That's what Roshos HaRabim means. And it's not a status of the location. It's at this time, at this place. If right now there are people, there's a steady flow of traffic, then the Dvar Halach goes from Hashem HaZalman, then from El Yashiv, every 5-10 minutes there are people going by, on average, every couple of minutes, if someone's gonna pop by, that's called the Roshos HaRabim. But the fact, just the fact that it's open and it's theoretically open to the public, that's not called the Roshos HaRabim. So we just saw it, the Bar Heitev quotes from the Knesset HaGadol. Can you prove that to me from a Gemara that we learned? Who can prove to me from a Gemara that we learned? A Beferish Gemara. Avram Herschel. You are correct, right? This concept comes in the Chanukah Sugya as well, correct? And the culture of Meshuk, definitely the language is being borrowed from there. But the question: how do I know that's necessarily relevant to Yichud? But a Gemara in, that's a good start. And now I'll bring it to the Yichud Sugyas. A Gemara in the Yichud Sugyas. Yes.
Was it the one where the two Talmidei Chachamim were traveling? Because it's a public place.
Oh, Gevaldik! The top of Pei Alpha Rav, just a couple lines up. Right, Rav and Yehuda Avakazi Ba'urcha, and they're worried about Yichud. Remember, we saw issues from there about Baderech and Ba'ah and the Gimel, and as we said, very good. The first thing you see from that Sugya is that just because you're outside does not automatically eliminate Yichud. You're outside, you're on the road, and there's still Yichud. Why? Because it's very nice you're on the road, but there's no one here. There's no one going by. I mean, she's going by, and Rav and Yehuda are going by, so theoretically someone could come by, but apparently. It was an urcha, it was a road. Other people are allowed to come by, and there are no walls. But apparently, if it's deserted enough, every 20 minutes or 30 minutes, someone walks by, that's not good enough. What that Gemara says, the Knesset HaGadola is putting into black and white, Pesach Pasuach Shusha Rabbah means a Pesach that's Pasuach to an area where there's some degree of regular traffic. So again, that may, as he points out, that may be a function also not only of place but of time. You have to think about. So if you're on Washington Heights, and this is Avram Tzvi relevant to both Hilchas Chanukah potentially and Hilchas Yichud. You're on the street in Washington, you're on Amsterdam Avenue here, the city that never sleeps, the street that never sleeps. There is traffic on the street, car traffic, foot traffic, until all hours. When we lived across the street in 495, it wasn't Chanukah season. The action Chanukah season, street Chanukah season also. But usually it was like late spring. There was an apartment across the street from us that they would every once in a while have parties, mamish, with loud music that you could hear across the street. And then we would wake up at 4:30 in the morning. And that one apartment was lit, and the music was wafting out the open window. So the truth is, Biskarov assumed that that's relevant to Hilchos Chanukah. Biskarov apparently used to light very, and he lived in Yerushalayim, used to light enormous cups of oil for Ner Chanukah because he lived across from a movie theater. So he was choshesh that kol regel mashuk is a chumrah, meaning that you have to be lit for as long as it has to stay lit until all the traffic ends. That was the Biskarov's chumrah. So he assumed that his neighbors had to light for hours and hours and hours because until the last show was over, until whatever, 20 minutes after the last show was over, there would be traffic on the street. If you live in Rockland County, so the streets are deserted, and most streets are deserted and dark and invisible soon after sunset. So which is A, relevant for the halachas of safety. If you're walking on the street, you should have a reflector and maybe even a flashlight. If you're driving on the street, you have to make sure that you're very, very careful about pedestrians. From Hilchos Yichud perspective, Pesach Pasuach to a dark, empty, deserted street is not Pesach Pasuach to Rosh Hashanah. So that's issue number one. The definition of Rosh Hashanah, that's the Bar Heitiv Kosin Knesset Gedola. The definition of Sharabim is there actually is a time and place that actually is traffic. Yes.
What about during the day? Everyone, you know, even on a street where everyone's not going to come by even during the day.
Oh, that's a good point. So Yishai points out during the day. If I live on a cul-de-sac or let's say an apartment building, so I leave the door of my apartment open, but you're at the end of the hallway on the fourth floor. No one walks by. How many people walk by your apartment from 9 to 5? 3 people. So that's not possible to Rosh Hashanah. Or, right, I live on a deserted street, I live on a dead end, or whatever it is, I live in a quiet street, and during the day no one walks by, in a chanamik. So then that's not going to be possible to Rosh Hashanah either. Good, so we're going to have to deal with Pasuach. That's coming soon. One more question, and then we'll... let's take some more questions. Yeah.
For a car with tinted windows, where someone...
Good, we're going to have to deal with that. Cars are a good question. But here's the thing with what-if questions. They're very good, and they're very important. And I'm pro such questions. And we need to learn more of the sugyas so that we're then equipped to deal with them. So I want to tell you now, I'm glad to stick around after us for questions, but let's sketch where we've been and where we're heading. So we opened up, we put together the pieces of Baal Be'ir. We opened up the sugya of Pesach Pasuach. Just from the what-if question that you're asking, you already realize that this is an intensely practical and far-reaching issue in Hilchos Yichud. And so far we dealt with one detail. The one detail we dealt with was how do you define Rishos HaRab? Right? Which was presented ostensibly as a question of when, but it's not really just a question of when. It's really a question of what does Rosh Hashanah mean? It could be day, it could be night. Question of the right place and the right time. And the Adafka are some places where during the daytime they're empty and it's at night when there are people around. Different places are different. So that's the definition of Rosh Hashanah. There are two other major issues that we need to deal with. One is to define, we define Rosh Hashanah, how about Pasuach? Does Pasuach, the Pesach Yechiyahu is going to present the Machlokes, we'll get to it tomorrow. Does Pasuach mean... Pesach means open, but does open mean as opposed to closed or as opposed to locked? I mean, you have to have the doors wide open or just that's not locked. And once again, as with the question of when, it's much more than a technical question of the door locked or not. It's really going to speak to the heart of how does Pesach Pasuach work. It's a major machlokas achronim. Pesach Yeshua is going to have lots of, not just like we saw the Baal Be'ir, the Chakira, whether it has to do with a practically coming in or Amos Baal Aleha, Lav Nafnia, that's going to be true here as well. Different Chakira, be true here as well. And finally, the third question we have to deal with, the question of who. Because some think that Libo Gaspa is not only a limitation on Baal Be'ir, it's also a limitation on Pesach Pasuach. And stop and consider the following for a moment. You're dating, and it's going well. Baruch Hashem. Halacha strongly encourages dating. You can see yourself married in 6 to 8 months from now. You should definitely start dating. At such time as you can see yourself married in 6 to 8 months from now, you should definitely start dating. If things are going well, it's Libo Gaspa. That should be irrelevant to Baal Be'ir, but it should be relevant to Pesach Pasuach. So we're going to get to that next time. I'm glad it's the graphic question.